and welcome in to another edition of the Rebel Room. I'm Taylor Byrne alongside Case Kiefer and Ray Brewer, and I promise we are going to get into UNLV's victory at Hawaii, what it means for their home game against Colorado State this week. But first, I just noticed under the table that Ray Brewer has just taken his shoes off, which just kind of, it actually made me think of, because I saw a recent tweet about taking shoes off on a plane. Where do you guys stand on this? Because it's one of the, there's probably a lot of things people do on planes that regularly annoy me, but I recently sat next to someone who took their shoes off the entire flight, and they were barefoot. So it was like even worse. It's just common decency. Like, why are we doing this to each other? Any feelings on the matter, gentlemen?
Unsanitary on a plane with two close associates on a long day when your dogs are barking. I'm okay with it.
Absolutely. I have no problem with the shoes off in the office.
I think that's bad and should be avoided. We have one mic that doesn't work very well, just so
pick,
I was kind of trying to lean into
pick one of them, Brewer. Case. In between both helps no one.
Anyway, I think it's bad, but sometimes on like red eyes, I've been guilty when I can't go to sleep and I'm like kick them off. Never like in the middle of the day, but
yeah, I'll loosen my shoes, like leave them unlaced, but I'm always leaving them on. And that's as much for the person next to me as just
well,
me.
Well, even on, not that this makes it any better, but I feel guilty about it immediately, like when I'm trying to go to sleep on a red eye and do it, so I'll try to like hide it under my backpack.
Right, well, anytime someone flies to Hawaii, there's probably a lot of shoes off on the plane. That's exactly what UNLV did last weekend. Went early for the trip. There's always, you know, kind of talk of how teams handle the journey to Hawaii. Tony did it basically the same way that he had at Gorman, which is a little extra time on the front. And, you know, spent a little day at the beach doing that whole thing, taking in the environment. I don't know that there's really one way or another that is like the definitive best plan, but using the outcome to justify it means that UNLV will certainly be doing that again when they travel there 2 years from now, because UNLV goes to Hawaii. 8.5-point underdogs, gets a 41-38. Really exciting victory. This was a back-and-forth game. UNLV, you know, only won in the final minute with the kick by Evan Pantels. But just, you know, especially after the passing game, we knew it was going to get better than it had against San Diego State when they had only 9 yards. But to see it make a jump like Snead did, 19 of 27, I think about 270, the rushing game was there. It was solid. It was just, it honestly reminded me of a lot of the UNLV Hawaii games we've seen in recent years, which are back and forth, high scoring affairs. And UNLV kind of breaks the streak here. This game had been won by the home team for quite a while, and now UNLV gets their first victory at Aloha Stadium since 2000.
Yeah, last team to get the ball usually wins. To UNLV's credit, fourth quarter, they had what they thought was the game's first turnover. A fumble recovery when Hawaii was driving. The play was reversed. The offense for UNLV was already on the field, so defense had to get back out there. Gave up two long runs where you could tell they were just mentally defeated. UNLV gets the ball. They're down 7 now, facing third down, and you're thinking, wow, if they go 3 and out, it's over. I was writing that it was over. They somehow picked up a first, and they won the game. So I think just the mental strength there to overcome the bad call to win the game is huge in terms of looking at where the program is overall. And I'll tell you, when you're able to run the rock like UNLV was able to on Saturday, the whole offense is 100 times better. They couldn't run against San Diego State. They were forced to pass. That led to the two completion night from Snead. But if you're able to get some yards on the ground and then he's not, you know, forced to win the game, it's a lot more manageable.
51 carries for 256 yards. Not a great average, but they were able to take some bites out of it, get some consistent production, 279 yards through the air. Penalties, you know, that's just been something with UNLV. I feel like that's just going to be, you know, maybe that's just a Sanchez thing, that they do get a number of penalties, but nothing that ended up killing them too much. Turnovers was a huge thing, just avoiding those mistakes. And the play you were talking about, Ray, that was a strange one. It was called correctly in the end. The Hawaii receiver touched the ball while he was out of bounds, which made it a dead ball at that point, giving Hawaii the ball, or making it stay with the Rainbow Warriors. But a very long review process for that. And as you mentioned, Hawaii scored two plays later. that did feel, at the time watching it, that felt like the end.
You know, it did feel like the end, especially because the way the defense gave up the touchdown. It was, a 35-yard run, you know.
Yeah, it was a
little resistance, and then a 12-yard run for a touchdown where he was untouched. And you're like, okay, this is another tough out for the Rebels in Hawaii. And you just think, you go back to kind of what we were talking about, Taylor and Case, last week, and shoot, since day one with Sanchez, where taking a program that is accustomed to losing and trying to get them to be a consistent winner is pretty daunting of a task. And when you are in that transformation, or when you are a consistent loser and now you have to become a winner, any little minor hiccup or roadblock in the way and you're done. And for them not to be done against Hawaii, granted it was just a Hawaii team that's better than I think we thought. You know, they were undefeated in the league in two games coming in, but I don't care who the opponent was, considering you've already lost this year to Idaho. The fact that they won that game on the road when they were faced with that kind of adversity, for me, kind of speaks volumes that maybe Sanchez is getting this thing going the right way.
And they have been, and this is something I talked with Tony today. I'll go to you for this, Case. They have been in a lot of these coin flip games at the end. You know, so many, I think it's, what, five losses by a touchdown or less last season. And just because, you know, whether it's the Fresno State, the rain coming down, defense falling apart, San Jose losing in overtime, just kind of not finding the ways to win. So they do win one of these that we've basically called coin flip games. And how much do you think that then that matters going forward? There's a lot of the intangibles, like everyone's happier. You know, can we suddenly expect, I guess, any better performance? You know, we were just talking before we started recording this, Colorado State, UNLV is a 2.5-point favorite this weekend, basically another coin flip type game. I mean, should we use finally winning one of those as like now they can always win a game like that? Or, you know, does it just say, okay, it's a coin flip that went their way this time?
Like, I'm firmly probably in the opposite camp of Brewer. Like, I think there's no problem saying this was good and it showed they were mentally strong and, you know, they came back from being embarrassed and won this game. But I don't think, you know, we have so much data from football games over years. I don't think that it's necessarily a skill to win a game by 3 points. If it's going to be a coin flip, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. They got unlucky last year, I think. I don't have the numbers in front of me now, but in the Mountain West, how many of these they lost. I mean, over time, these things even out, they regress. And I think that you could have gone into this season rationally expecting them to pick up some of these. They did one against Hawaii. I'm not taking anything away from their performance. I thought it was great. But if it comes back this week and they play a great game against Colorado State and they lose by three, I don't think it'd be fair for anyone to, you know, trash their performance
and
say that
they completely forgot how
to win. Tony Sanchez isn't a good close game coach. I mean, I think we just need to kind of take it all in the middle. It's great for them to win, but if this is the same type of game and they do ultimately lose, I don't really think that there's any narrative building there.
Here's the deal. Last year, you know, we talk, even if we go back to when Hauk was the coach, if we look toward the tail end of the schedule and, you know, they ran out of gas, they steamed out. But, you know, last year was just a matter of they ran out of bodies, man. They dressed one tight end for the last game against Wyoming. They were, you know, playing, you know, guys who weren't fully developed physically, guys who were walk-ons. And this year, they're better. Now, granted, wide receiver, I can't forget this guy's name, and I want to give him a shout-out. They moved
Jericho Flowers?
Yeah, and he was great, man. He had a few nice good plays from DB to wide receiver. And
he might have even been the one with that third down conversion you were talking about.
Yeah, and he may have been. In my defense, I was dozing off during the game.
That is late for you.
Way late, and I had a rough Saturday. So, but, you know, the fact that they're piecing it together and they have an opportunity, and I think just the fact that they have an opportunity, usually at this stage of the season, the outcome's kind of decided.
You're talking about what kind of moral victories they can get the rest of the year. I mean, the canon, like it's all on that one game, and that's not the case.
And right now they have an opportunity to have a winning record, compete in a bowl, win a bowl, win the canon.
Yeah, everything that they had preseason as a goal is still out there.
Except Mountain West champions.
Yeah, you still can. With only one loss, you know, in theory, San Diego State could give a couple back. Like, we all know that that's very unlikely since they don't even play Boise State, you know, in the regular season. So most likely that one's off the table, but that was always the most unrealistic of the, you know, of the potential goals. Like, a bowl game, you're three victories away. Technically two, although I don't, you know that their APR would put them where they would need to be in line to get in a bowl game as a sub-500 team. But the Cannon game is absolutely there. I think, you know, they're sort of showing, or at least in this one game showed, and we will, you know, learn more as they get into more of these 50-50 games, but they're showing that they kind of are who we thought they were, in that in this league, you can beat all of these teams. Throw out San Diego State and Boise State, but you can be in a game with the rest of this league, and you're going to win some of those and you're going to lose some of those. But there will eventually be a separation, you know, each year as it goes forward. Eventually, I think more programs will pull themselves out of this or fall, you know, below it. But the teams that can kind of consistently be towards the top of that, and UNLV right now, bottom middle, but that's middle is a pretty decent place to be in, you know, the league outlook, considering how far down UNLV always is. So that does make this year, you know, the rest of this year decently exciting, especially that helps because not too many people are looking forward to basketball, which, you know, approaching November is usually the quip, you know, when does basketball season start? This team only has two victories now. You know,
they have three, and we're all
excited.
They
have three, and people are excited. Yeah. You know,
I think the fact that if you look at the schedule and it's easy for UNLV to navigate, that makes it a little more exciting as well.
How much better does it make it if they win two of these next three, which are all winnable, and then that Cannon game can be for everything you dream of, Brewer? The bowl eligibility, not only getting the Cannon red. I think that if you're UNLV,
the
I know
Cannon is red now. Please,
well,
keeping it.
What did
it,
I say? Getting it?
It red.
Well, I'm just saying. I think say that I know the old coach cliche is one game at a time. But if I'm a fan of UNLV, the thing I'm focused on right now is I really want to win two of these next three.
That would be huge. You know, you'd be sitting there 5-5. 5-6 then, most likely with the loss at Boise State, but going into Reno with, as you said, a lot, basically everything on the table, the Cannon, the bowl game, just being a 500 team, which is huge at a place like this. You know, and we're starting to go down that path and getting a little ahead of ourselves, but, you know, if they are able to go from 3 wins to 6 wins in the first 2 years, it, you know, in many ways justifies a lot of the off-the-field excitement and reasons to believe that this thing is actually building quite a bit under Tony Sanchez. Obviously, the practice facility, which he had a huge hand in, the stadium, which he had almost no hand in, but benefits from, are, you know, big pieces on the outside of it. But a lot of what we've talked about of what they've been building and the new uniforms and the excitement, all that has been talk and it's been hype and it's been things that haven't necessarily been backed up on the field, in part because they were 3-9 last year with a lot of close losses. So if that does suddenly turn to something like a big jump, even to 5 or 6 wins, then it, you know, it justifies, I think, you know, almost all of the excitement. I won't say that it justifies a Tony Sanchez statue necessarily.
Contract extension? If they go, if they win a bowl this year, does he get an extension?
If they win a bowl?
If they win a bowl, I think I'm okay with giving him an extension.
Yeah, not even saying. Yeah, I think I would be okay with it too, but not even saying that. I would say yes that he would get one.
Would you double his salary? Joking.
I mean, if you can, like, why not?
I just didn't. Yeah, I don't know the financial situation.
If you can afford it, sure. But yeah, when you first brought up the contract extension, it was like week 3 or 4 or something like that.
Prior to the Idaho,
can we at least, you know, get to the end of the year? So I always thought that was a reasonable thing to come back to at the end of the year, and then it just, you know, kind of depends on how it goes.
Could we give him a lifetime contract?
You can try.
Because now it doesn't have to go through the Board of Regents, right?
Yep. So money can potentially flow a lot more. You know, that's a big thing for UNLV going forward.
Yeah.
This game, the Hawaii game, I felt pretty good about. Going there is always tricky, but I liked UNLV to cover for sure. And
I sent you my prediction, even though we weren't able to publish them.
Yeah.
Did you have them winning?
He did.
Daddy
nice.
Brewer.
Daddy Brewer. I honestly, I would have picked Hawaii by three. So I think I would have gotten the cover. And I did learn a Ray Brewer lesson on Saturday.
What's that?
I bet on two Mountain West teams, both of which hail from the beautiful state of Nevada. One came through, one did not. I was thinking of you all night while I was sweating those two games.
Who did they lose to?
San Jose State.
Yes.
Which is a big needle in a...
to San Jose.
That is the second reference to that song I've heard today.
I'm feeling less and less good about my my Reno backing in the Cannon game, but I'm not coming off of it now.
But I guess I was saying that, you know, had at least, I feel like, a decent idea of what might happen going into the Hawaii game, to say that against Colorado State, I have no clue. I really don't know how this game is going to go. We've seen kind of all different sides of Snead and not sure yet what reality is, what the most kind of consistent performance from him is, especially considering turnovers, things of that nature. But Colorado State, a team that's generally been towards the top of the conference in a bit of a down year under Mike Bobo, 3-4, 1-2, in league
play. Yeah, but
play. They've
been good of late. They upset Utah State at home. They were like a 15-point dog that day, and then they played great D last week against Boise. Got some onside kicks to stay in the game. But, I mean, this is not the spot for UNLV. I mean, in my humble opinion, this is not the spot for UNLV.
Yeah, I'm not counting them out by any means or anything, but it does seem like Colorado State has made some improvements these last couple weeks. I think they had benched Nick Stevens, their quarterback, earlier in the year.
Yep.
Now he's come back and looked kind of like you might expect him to take the next step this year. I've always liked Mike Bobo, so I'm a little bit worried about this. This feels kind of like the San Diego State game where I was like, the worst thing that could happen was San Diego State going to South Alabama and losing. I feel like this is a bad spot to face Colorado State too, where they definitely look a lot better than they did 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I think that makes it exciting though, because we're going into this game really unknown, and UNLV's season could, in theory, I mean, we keep talking about the 50-50 games, but their season could turn on this game, because this is one that you weren't necessarily expecting preseason, and it could make up for the Idaho loss. And yet at the same time, being realistic about it, Colorado State might be even by far the better team. Like they just might be the better team on the field on Saturday, but a lot to figure out there. The Mountain West gives you these kind of opportunities, gives UNLV a lot of opportunities to emerge towards mediocrity, and that's at UNLV, that's all you're trying to do right now.
You're mediocre, you're in the Hall of Fame.
It's a
7-5, we save you a seat.
It's a lot better than bad. Mediocre looks great when you've been bad most of the time, and UNLV giving itself a chance here 7 games into the season to approach a 500 record, and that's exciting. You know, that's progress, and you know, breaking through or emerging through some difficult injuries. But as you said, Ray, doesn't seem to be as bad as last year. They shouldn't drop off the table like they did last year, but we will see as they forge on. Lots of excitement yet for Tony Sanchez's team. I'm almost like, I'm not going to be rooting in this game, obviously, but I, for interest's sake, I would hope that they win the game, because it just makes it surprising that they could be 4-4, and it would just make it an intriguing finish.
Plus, Tony's a good quote. I like to write about him more than.
Well, he's good in losses too. So
yeah, he's fun. He's fun. He is. He's a fun quote. My biggest problem with him is, and he talks too fast.
He does talk. I have to stop and rewind so many times when
crazy transcribing.
Yeah. That's actually what I have ahead of me after we're done with this podcast. So I'm going to get to that. For Ray, for Case, I'm Taylor, and we'll talk to you guys next week.